Entrepreneurship on 702.
Ian Calvert is my guest. He joins me now on the line. Ian, thank you so much for agreeing to come and talk to me again this week. I really appreciate it, sir.
Hi, Aubrey. You're welcome. It's good to be back.
So that was the big conversation, if you remember, last week, the question of funding. And almost a sense that I got was, please, man, could you please stop patronizing us with all of these mindset conversations? we're good. Could you tell us how to get money? Because we need money for our businesses. Now, while I'm a big mindset guy, I'm a big, big mindset guy, because I believe that if your idea is communicated well enough and you find the right ways of communicating the idea will be what unlocks the funding. But there are some good ideas out there that maybe have not found somebody to articulate them in the right way to the relevant people to unlock the funding. How do we bridge that gap, Ian? That's the big, big one. Because I do believe that there's some excellent ideas out there that young people have that they simply are not finding the funding for.
Well, definitely, Aubrey. And I think, again, just to recap what you were saying before the break, I think the mindset work, you know, in the context of youth unemployment in this country, and as you said, we've just got to accept that the jobs are just not going to be there, and so young people are going to have to create their own jobs. So there's a big part of the population, they might not be necessarily the listeners to your show, who need to develop that mindset of, I've got to create something for myself, and that's the mindset we're talking about there. Obviously, in the lively discussions we had last week, a lot of your listeners are entrepreneurs. They've got that mindset. They've got those ideas. And now they're looking for funding. And, you know, there's no shortage of funding, and there's no shortage of good ideas. It's where the two meet that is the problem. But let's start with kind of what is a fundable idea.
Yeah.
And as I think I mentioned last week, you know, any form of investor or funder looks at two things. They look at the business idea, and then they look at the individual, you know, who's going to be making that idea happen. And they've got to have a level of comfort with both. So they're putting their money on the horse and the jockey.
Yeah.
And as you said, the idea has got to have a proof of concept. You know, it's got to be solving a problem. And too often, what a lot of people think, wow, I've got a great idea, but can they honestly say, you know, what is the problem that I'm solving? And do I understand all the complexities of that problem? And we always say to our entrepreneurs, you know, stay married to the problem, don't stay married to your solution. Because you've got to be able to say, okay, so this first solution, let's go and try it, let's pilot it, let's get to the first, you know, let's sell one product to one customer, or let's provide our service to one customer, and then let's interrogate it, let's try it. And the best entrepreneurs, yes, people need money and funding to operationalize their business and to grow and scale their business, but the best businesses are the ones that have proven that they've sold one product to one customer. And, you know, it's well documented. It's a thing called the lean startup method, where you just get your basic, the most basic viable proposition of what you're doing, and you try and sell it. Because ultimately, the best investor you can ever get is a customer. Yeah? Because customers don't ask for shares in your company. They don't ask too many questions. They don't sit in your board meetings. And if you're doing a good job, then they're going to keep coming back. So try and grow an initial customer base. Yeah? And then once you've got that customer base, then the investors will say, okay, so you've got regular people coming in. Now, obviously, it all depends on the nature of the business. And if to make that product or deliver that service requires big capital investment, then you've got to be able to find some form of funding. But you've got to be able to do that. You've got to be able to prove that you have a concept worth investing in, and that what investors call the addressable market, you know, how many people are there out there look like your first customer?
Yeah.
Can you build a business from it?
Give us a call, 011-883-0702. We'd love to hear from you. What are the issues that you have around the business idea that you may have, the issue that you would like to operationalize, or the idea that you would like to operationalize. What is it that you can offer a would-be investor that would make them really release the monies that they have? I want you to keep this in mind, though, that any investor is not just looking to do something because you're a nice guy, you present well, or girl, you present well and you look good and your idea sounds good. Remember that the potential investor wants a return on their investment plus some. Does your idea have that? Does it have that? And by the way, I'd also like to add to say that business people are not doing things for reasons such as patriotism or goodness, niceness. There's always a very, very distinct functional utilitarian reason behind their business engagement. It's called business. So perhaps we need to have a conversation about what are the fundamental sentiments that we enter this conversation with. Are they business sentiments? Are they religious sentiments? Are they political sentiments? And maybe have Ian Calvert comment on that. Ian?
Yeah, you're right, Aubrey, in that it is business and people are looking for a return. But I think the one silver lining that we have in the country where we have so many problems, so many economic problems, so many social problems, so many environmental problems, is that a lot of the early capital, the early funding that is available, is being made available for reasons of social impact or social change. So there are a lot of grants out there, there are a lot of sort of programs or competitions that are looking for ideas that solve a problem. So not just ideas that have the potential to make money, but have the potential to make money and solve the problem. And those are the guys that we particularly work with. And they're not sort of charities or philanthropies. They're businesses that do good and do well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're very clear on what the problem is they're solving. And I think I said last time, more and more, the kind of seed capital that a lot of your listeners are looking for, there's more of it in that space where you're clearly saying, so this is a problem, whether it's sanitation in my community or provision of water in my community or delivering, particularly in the environment we're in with coming out of COVID, where movement was difficult and now where the cost of petrol is exorbitant. You know, how do you deliver food to people in distant communities? And I'll give you one example. I think it's always good to be concrete in these things. So one of the businesses that we work with, ironically, it's a business called Kulula, but not the airline that just went out of business, but
yeah.
Kulola,
yeah.
Which is a rural grocery delivery service run by an amazing young entrepreneur called Siandin Tetwa. Mm. And what they did was that they realized that in rural KZN, which is where they're based, that the distances that people in the rural communities, the outlying communities, had to, and those were consumers, so just people wanting to buy food for themselves, but they're also spaza shops and
yep.
shop owners who wanted to buy food to sell. And the cost of traveling into the cities to go to the wholesalers, to buy the gear, to buy their goods and go home again was just exorbitant. And importantly, what Sianda did was, using fairly basic technology, he mapped those households. So he, with sort of geo-mapping. So in the same way that you've got Google Maps, then he mapped some of those houses which didn't have addresses that the post office could deliver to or anything else. And using that, he built up slowly a customer base where he was delivering food, delivering basic staples to those customers.
Yeah.
And by doing that, he was solving a problem. And there are a lot of people in this country wanting to fund initiatives that are solving food, what's called food security, you know, just the ability for people to eat. So he was already solving a problem. And what he did was, yes, he had a little bit of grant funding, literally a few thousand rand to help him get it up and started.
Yeah.
But ultimately, he started trading. Yeah. And he started trading, and he would deliver 10,000 rands worth of goods.
Yeah.
And he did, then a few months later, 100,000 rand. So it's a combination of finding people who believe in what you believe in, find people who believe in the problem that you are solving. And it doesn't, as I say, it doesn't have to be some great philanthropic thing, but any problem, any business nowadays that is solving issues of logistics, of food, of water, sanitation. There's another business I'll touch on now, which is providing basic medical aid to people who can't afford medical aid by a simple savings card, which can only be used at medical service providers.
Mm.
And again, he's attracted funding. That's OI medical card. He's attracted funding by providing a service to a few people and solving a clear problem. So there are people out there who will give you grants in the early stage, and it's really a pathway to investment. You know, you start, you might win a pitching competition that'll help you get to the next competition, that'll help you get to an initial grant, that will help you get to a bigger grant. And then when you have the scale, then at that stage, that's when the investors come along. And yes, they absolutely want a return on their investment, but they also want to see the impact that you're having delivered at scale. And too often, I think entrepreneurs, particularly first-time entrepreneurs, have a very naive understanding that all of a sudden they're going to get an investor from day one coming in and giving them all the money that they want,
Where
it just doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
So you've got to see this as a pathway. You've got to see this as a runway where you find little bits of funding to get to that first proof of concept. Then you start to grow, and only then will you get to a point where people will give you serious money to operationalize the business.
This person says, "Hi, bro. Obzavusi Tembegwayo once said, businesses don't compete with businesses. Value chains compete with value chains." I struggle to understand the concept of value chains. That's from Letlo Nola in Munziville. Care to talk a little bit about that, Ian?
Look, I mean, Vusi, I can never do justice to what Vusi talks about. But I think, yeah, it's just, it's understanding, and I think we touched on it last week, you know, the definition of an entrepreneur, the word entrepreneur comes from finding gaps in things. You know, it literally means to take from the gap.
Yeah.
And where we have value chains in any industry, whether it's financial services, whether it's food and food retail, you know, it's understanding where the value is from where the food is made to how it's delivered to the retailer, from how it gets from the retailer to the consumer. So all of those different chains, and where can you improve the system? Yeah. So where is there a problem to solve, and where is a problem to solve that can be solved profitably? Yeah.
Mm.
And a lot of that comes from fine tuning. So both those businesses I just mentioned, Kalula, the grocery distribution service, or your medical card, those guys don't have one idea and just believe that they've got it cracked. Every day they're fine tuning. Okay, so that didn't work. Or how do we make sure we're delivering more goods using less petrol?
Mm.
You know, how do we, as OU medical card, you know, what are people prepared to pay for? You know, can we charge them an admin fee to manage this, or do we charge them a subscription fee that they? Yeah, you know, so it's all the little things, and those two the guys who run those businesses obsess about those little things on a daily basis, because they realize they're in a value chain, and people either side of their business have expectations. So where can they make a meaningful difference, make meaningful revenue, and do it in a profitable way?
Let's take some calls. Mpo is in Fort Lauderdale. Hi, Mpo.
Good day, bro. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks. And Paul, go for it, man.
I'm good. I'd like to make a comment about the institution, especially. I'm an aspiring young entrepreneur, and yeah. I've dealt with all these commercial institutions from South Africa, including the banks.
Yeah.
And if your business is an incubation period, they make it so difficult for you to access the funding in terms of the requirements of the funding.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, so if you are in incubation phase, they ask for things like, assets and liability statements, for example.
Yeah.
And if you are only in the beginning phase, you don't have
maybe
assets or liabilities.
Yeah. So now, that did come out in last week's conversation as to how do you credibly create a history or a document that is going to give a potential funder, investor, the kind of information that they need if you are an absolute startup. And, Ian, that came through last week. How do we deal with that?
Yeah, well, as I just said, Aubrey, I think, we've got to be realistic that the days of, or the number of times a big investor will back a completely green startup are so limited. You know, we hear all of these sort of legendary stories from Silicon Valley about guys walking into a boardroom and selling people on an idea from a PowerPoint slide and getting millions of dollars. It just doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So as a business that's a startup that is being incubated, as your listener said, that might not have assets and liabilities, they will not find an investor.
Yeah.
But what they might find is some seed capital, some startup capital. And yes, what they're looking for often is not what's on your balance sheet, you know, your assets and liabilities.
Yeah.
Because you might not have a lot. But to be honest, everybody has something that they own and something that they owe, which is basically what a balance sheet is.
Yes.
What they're looking for is not the content of the balance sheet, but the fact that you've got one, yeah, or the fact that you've taken it upon yourself to keep some form of financial records.
Yeah.
And usually in, you know, at that early stage, it's really just an income statement. Yeah. And an income, I won't get into all the technical, but an income statement is basically what are we spending and what are we earning?
Yeah.
Is there any, and for most businesses, you obviously wouldn't have much profit left over. So your expenses are bigger than your income. So it's not so much what does that look like, but the fact that you've got one, that you've taken. So if you're hustling to start up a business and you're obviously funding it out of your own pocket, then keep the slips. You know, keep the slips for everything and write on those slips, this is a personal expense or this is a business expense.
Right.
And then find somebody, preferably a bookkeeper, doesn't have to be an expensive accountant, to turn those slips and capture those slips into a financial statement. Yeah. There's another entrepreneur I'm working with at the moment who's about to receive R1 million in funding from a technology institution. And really that's on the basis of a simple Excel spreadsheet where she's been capturing, you know, what am I spending? What am I earning? You know, so they're looking for somebody with the diligence and the professionalism, if you like, to say, you know, I look after the rand and cents and I know where everything is going.
Yeah.
Because you can walk in with any brilliant business idea, you can blow them away with your PowerPoint presentation. But if you've got no financial document at all, even if it's just a simple document that doesn't have much content in it, yeah, you're not there. Yeah, would you? You've got to ask yourself.
Exactly.
You
yeah. Yeah.
When they don't seem to know how to look after money.
Yeah.
So, and I know I'm sounding a bit harsh here, but it's the simple things like that, just to get the, just to show that you understand that you have to keep the documentation.
Yeah. No. I understand that. You know, we got to be sensitive to the realities of the moment. Yeah. Mm. And no one is more sensitive to the fact that it's desperate out there. It's terrible out there. I get it, But I think that we would be doing our listeners a disservice if we mollycoddled the matter. The reality is, if I am going to fund your business, however strongly you may feel about your business and the need for funders, investors, venture capitalists to see the urgency of the moment to fund these business, nobody is going to part with very scarce resources on the basis of your feelings of urgency. They do need a sense that you are able to look after money as you ask for money. And I'm, as much as anybody, willing to accept that perhaps we need a lot more play. We need a lot more pliability in that conversation. But the principle remains the same. And I just feel like if we don't tell it as it is, we may give senses of false hope. We may, and that would be unfair.
Well, exactly. And I think the other thing is, Orby, and I don't know if I can dare use the word mindset again, but part of the entrepreneurial mindset, it's not just about critical thinking and all the stuff that we were talking about. You know, it's not an academic school lesson. It's the ability to understand that the person in front of you, whether that be a customer, a bank manager, an investor, it's the ability to understand what's going through their mind, yeah, and what do they need to want to collaborate with you, yeah?
Yeah,
and that's the entrepreneurial mindset, which comes from a place of being a good judge of human nature, whether you call it empathy or not, but just understanding what's in their minds and what's important to them. And the thing is, if you're speaking to people who have money and you want them to give you some money, then you can probably work out that money is quite important to them. So best you show them that you understand it as well and that you can handle it and you'll manage it correctly. So the way you talk to an investor or a bank manager or whatever is very different maybe from the way you talk to a customer. So it's being able to be a bit of a chameleon. The entrepreneurial mindset is all about adaptability, to be able to show up in different situations, in different spaces, and tell exactly the right story to that particular audience. And that's based on understanding what they're looking for. And too often we go in on the basis of, let me tell you what I want to tell you, rather than let me tell you what you want to hear. And
yeah,
that's what separates the good entrepreneurs from the stubborn entrepreneurs. And often, again, we talk about growth mindset. We automatically assume that if I'm an entrepreneur, I have this growth mindset, that I'm adaptable and flexible. But too many entrepreneurs have such a fixed mindset because they think this solution is the best thing that's ever existed. I'll take no criticism of it. This is the way we're going to do it. And often when they're building a team, it's like, it's my way or the highway. This is my business. And that is not being an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
That's just being stubborn.
Yeah.
So you need to develop the flexibility and the adaptability to deal with different people in different ways and never believe that your idea is so good that it can't be improved upon.
Let's talk to Thabo in four ways. Hi, Thabo.
Hi, Aubrey.
Sure.
Ian, how's it? I've got a slightly different approach to this thing, which I have been thinking about.
But yeah,
I want you guys, I want you to tell me if maybe you think this would work or not, just for entrepreneurship on a national level.
Yeah.
We speak about proof of concept, right? Because there is no funding. And, you know, we've known that for years. I'm an entrepreneur myself.
Yeah.
And we are talking about a population in the country, almost about 50% is unemployed.
Yeah.
So to prove a concept in that type of market is going to be very difficult because people don't have money, right? So isn't it a structural, we have to have like a structural reform, I'm now specifically speaking about South Africa, that instead of maybe awarding Thabo with a tender worth 50 million, as an example, to go build a certain school in a certain municipality,
mm.
instead of giving that tender to one person, if we absorbed people within that community, within that municipality, and we employed them over a period of years for that 50 million, it gets people working. When people are working, the economy is moving. Now, when people are working, it means more people can afford things. Then we've got less unemployment. Then an entrepreneur like myself, it's easier to show proof of concept when there's more money going around.
Yeah.
Right? And I think, I think that's probably the only way we are going to get out of it, because as entrepreneurs, as a business, to say that we have to create the job, it's difficult to create the jobs in this type of environment where nobody's working. So somebody has to kickstart that process. Please let me know what you think. Thanks.
Tabo, thanks very much for your call. Let me quickly take this call. Prince, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, good, thanks, Prince. You're in journalism. Please switch off your radio, Prince.
Okay. Okay. Sorry. Okay, Aubrey, I just wanted to ask a question here. Is it possible that we can get, because I'm currently just started a business in construction. I'm doing plumbing. So I just wanted to ask, is it possible that you can get not necessarily cash as a fund from the funders, but we get the machines and the tools to do the work? It's so that we can, because there's a lot of big companies that are competitors, and then you see when someone is using better tools than you, obviously you don't get some jobs most of the time. So is it possible that we can get people or the government that can fund us with machinery and tools as well?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Prince, please listen to Ian on the radio. I'm going to take one more call. John is in Craig Hall Park. Hi, John.
Yeah, good, thanks. And hello, Ian and Aubrey. Aubrey, I have, and Ian, I have 2 points of departure, and I'd like to offer these for Ian's comment and to point out where the fallacies might be. My first point of departure is those municipalities, I think somewhere in the West, where the city council had failed to maintain the sewage works, and a certain citizens organization was finally authorized through the courts to take over the operation of the sewage works. That's the first point of departure. The other point of departure is a quote from a book published nearly 75 years ago, very well-known book, Cry the Beloved Country, Alan Paton.
Yeah.
And the quotation is, "The tragedy is not that things are broken. The tragedy is that things are not mended." Now, if we put those two things together, would it be concert to bring that even into a city? I live in Craig Hall Park. Craig Park Residents Association has been very well established for, I think, over 70 years. It has good financial records, good governance. Is there a way to look at the diversion of rates and taxes for a certain region to an organization that would then take responsibility for fixing the potholes, fixing the leaks of the water reticulation system?
Yeah, very good idea there. Ian?
Sure. Should we work backwards on that?
Yeah, let's work backwards.
Look, I think what you're talking about there is a fundamental sort of economic policy thing do we privatize services, which is basically what you're saying. So let's not have a government department to do all of that or a state-owned enterprise to do all of that. Let's take the rates and taxes, let's fund or let's allow the local ratepayers to fund privately run companies who provide those services. And those are models that work in many countries around the world where, dare I say, electricity is provided by private companies, water is provided by private companies. And therefore, when that's happening, your customers keep you accountable, because if you don't deliver water well, then they'll go to somebody else.
Yep.
But that's a fundamental political decision that I don't know that our government is ready to make just yet, despite the atrocious state of our state-owned enterprises, and particularly Eskom, as we know. But the same principle applies, as the listener says. Privately run sanitation companies, privately run water companies. It's definitely an option, but it goes a little bit against the command and control mindset of the current government. I was really happy to hear Prince's comment around, you know, he's a plumber, he's a tradesman, and and access to tools. I think, firstly, like we said last week, you know, sometimes we glamorize this word entrepreneur. What we should be talking about is just small businesses, you know, like small enterprises that provide a valuable service, and trades, like, you know, artisans, basically, like plumbers, electricians, carpenters, will always be needed, and provided you've got the skill, and there's increasing activity to support those kind of people. The Alan Gray Foundation, you know, the big financial services company, they now have a division called Alan Gray Makers, which is all around supporting tradesmen, artisans, people who work with their hands. And again, there's a culture in our country that we believe that every school leaver, you know, should aspire to going to university. But actually, you know, if we get our colleges right, our TVET colleges, our skills training colleges right, those are going to create micro enterprises, solopreneurs who are plumbers. So that, so all I'm saying is that's a great thing. And let's, you know, let's not think that being an entrepreneur is cooler than being a plumber, because ultimately you're earning.
Exactly, yeah.
There are, you know, I'm not an expert in this area, but the one thing that the people with money will like to do is lend money against an asset. Yeah. So if you've got, so you need some fancy, some complicated plumbing equipment or electrical equipment or whatever, it's much easier to raise a loan or funding for an asset that sits somewhere and sits on a balance sheet than it is just for somebody to give you cash to pay salaries. So funders like funding things that exist. I think if you try, and I mean, a lot of the hardware suppliers now, you know, they're all like every company in the country. They all have their supply development targets. They have their BEE targets. And a lot of them run programs to make access to tools affordable for the artisans in the country. So I would go knocking at your local builder's warehouse or your local Buco store or whatever, and you never know. They might be able to tell you of different programs that make those tools available and affordable. But I think what I loved about his comment, and I think Thabo earlier on from that as well, is that what is going to solve this country's problems are not big, you know, these sort of mythical startup unicorns that are going to employ thousands of people. It's hundreds of thousands of micro businesses. And those micro businesses might be just one person. It might be a plumber, or it might be a delivery guy. It might be a waste collector. But it might be somebody who can employ two people. And there's this will probably get me into trouble, but there's the SASME Fund, yeah, which is the South African Small and Medium Enterprise Fund, which is a great initiative, and it raises a lot of money from corporate South Africa. The sad thing is it's sort of become almost a venture capital fund, where the money's deployed into a handful of VC companies who in turn deploy it into a handful of sort of high growth tech enterprises, and that's fine. You know, those businesses need support, but let's not kid ourselves that that's stimulating small business in the country. That's stimulating the tech startup industry.
Yeah.
So we need funding, we need support, we need an ecosystem that supports micro enterprise. And I think more and more people are starting to realize that and starting to do it. And so a small business, often these big corporates and big investors think that a small business is a business that isn't big yet, when in fact a small business, you know, this country's been built on small businesses. Our communities are built on small businesses, whether it's the spaza shop around the corner, whether it's the tailor, whether it's the local plumber, whatever. They're small businesses, and we must sort of relish the fact that they are sustainable businesses.
Yeah. Give us a call on 011-883-0702. Let's just move on to a slightly different idea, different topic. How do we learn to speak the language of business without the training? In other words, mm-hmm. I've got a good idea. I'm a solopreneur. I've got a good idea. I can do certain things. In other words, I can provide a service. If your pipes are leaking, I can fix mm-hmm. them, right? And I am trying to get funding for this business, or I'm trying to get resources, or to get, you know, the machinery that goes along with. But I'm not educated in being able to talk about projections and mm-hmm. That language, right? I don't know how to speak that mm-hmm. language. How should I start in order for me to make my small business viable for funding, for institutional funding? Yeah. Well, how do I speak the language?
It's a great question, Aubrey. I think there are a number of things, and obviously I'm very aware, and as you said earlier, that we're in a desperate situation out there, and people. Just having data to be able to get onto the internet to find those resources is a huge challenge. To be able to go and buy a book on these subjects is a huge challenge. But there is so much information out there. It is just a question of trying to find a way. So if you can find some way of getting onto YouTube and just put in some of those questions. What is an income statement? What is an asset? Just put those into YouTube or Google. You will find the answers in very plain English. There are a lot of companies that run ongoing business training sessions, which will cover all of those basic things. So it is important that you've just got to try and find a way to access that information. You don't have to enroll in a business course. As I say, there are lots of organizations running free seminars that you can go to on a Saturday morning, and they will teach you you'll be able to understand what the language is. But and there are some basics that you need to understand, so that when the bank manager says, I need to see your assets and liabilities, but you kind of understand it, right? So he wants to see what I own, and the liabilities are what I owe. How much? So it's boiling all of those things down into simple things. So it's important to know that. But the worst thing in life that you can do is try and get into a conversation, and pretend that you speak a language that you don't speak. So it would be crazy for me to learn a few words of Zulu and then try and get into a conversation with one of your listeners, and then I'd be completely lost. So you've got to acknowledge what you know and what you don't know. And it's always better in business to actually understand a little bit more than other people think you understand. But there are ways of finding that information. I hope that wasn't too vague, but it's out there. If you can just...
If I understand you correctly, Ian, is that we should keep things simple. Like not get caught up in the idea that the more jargon I use, the better I sound. The idea is to keep as simple as possible and say what you understand. Because it's so very easy to catch somebody out who's learned, as you say, a few words in isiZulu, who doesn't know what they're talking about, right? But I think what you're saying is that the most attractive entrepreneur or small business person is a person that can keep things as simple as possible so that we understand that they understand what they're talking about. Because if it gets to a place where you're trying to... just keep it simple. Let me take one more call from Anonymous in Boxburg. Hi, Anonymous.
Hi, Aubrey. How are you?
Very good. Thanks, Anonymous. Go ahead. What's on your mind?
I'm good. Yes. My father is an entrepreneur. So he built a filling station. So now currently, because he's a pensioner, he's actually leasing the filling station. But I'm just thinking, since as the children, we have to take over the business, obviously. So I want to know, how does he get funding to run the business himself? Because he doesn't have the financial statements. But the structure, the filling station that he built, you know, from scratch,
yeah,
is there. And I mean, yeah, he's doing a lot of things, like even, but okay, let me just talk about the filling station only for now, because he has other, you know, other things that he is doing.
Well, is the filling station already operational?
Yes, it's very lucrative, and to a point that he is renting this to this white family. And you know, whenever he's renting the filling station to other people, because this business is so profitable, these people, they end up you know, being dishonest, because they know that he's not educated. So they want to take over the business. They try every trick in the book. Like now, as I'm speaking to you, there's a lawsuit because they are trying every trick, you know, in the book to take over, you know, the business.
Yeah.
So
hold on, Anonymous. A couple of things. There's the business, right?
Yes.
And then there
yes.
is the filling station, the infrastructure of the filling station. The infrastructure of yes. the filling station is not the business.
The franchise, yes.
But no,
the franchise.
What my man. Mm. I'm saying to you that just for your own mind to understand yes. the issues, there's the business, the yes. trading of whatever it is that the business does, the selling of petrol and oil and whatever services.
And that's the restaurant, yeah.
That's the business, right? And then there is the infrastructure that I get the sense is owned by your father.
Yes.
Now, the business is that owned by your father, not the infrastructure, the business.
The business, yes.
Is that owned by your father?
Yes.
All right. Ian?
Yeah, I think, firstly, I mean, you said the issue is that he doesn't have financial records. It's a sad, you know, as much as, like we were saying, we like to keep it simple, but he needs, if he's going to be able to defend himself against some of the people. I'm thinking like you, Aubrey, where Anonymous's father owns the building, owns the pumps, but is sort of renting it out to somebody else to trade out of there. Yeah, unless things are written down. So unless there's a clear rental agreement, and you know, to use that infrastructure and to use that property, and unless your father is documenting how much rent they're paying him on a monthly basis. And it sounds like it's a very valuable asset if people are wanting to be there. Without some of those basics in place, it's going to be very hard to defend yourself legally against some of these unscrupulous people who are trying to take advantage.
Yeah.
So, and again, you can go to, there's an organization called Business Partners, which is funded by a large South African corporation that provides some of this basic business support and legal protection support to people so they understand what their rights are. So I would encourage you to go and speak to them.
Ian, we've completely run out of time. I'm so sorry. Please give out your contact details for those people that may want to get in touch with you. And I'm sure we're going to be having more such conversations going forward. But your contact details, please, Ian.
Great. Well, you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Further Impact. You can visit our website, www.furtherimpact.co. So not .co.za, just .co. And if you'd like to, you can email us at info at furtherimpact.co.
Ian Calvert,
I'd be happy to come back again.
Sure. Ian Calvert, thank you so much for joining us this evening, founder at Further.